What is up, you guys? Welcome to another edition of Controversial Thoughts. This is my weekly soliloquy. It's my weekly opportunity to do a little monologuing about something that I find interesting or relevant. Last week's Controversial Thoughts episode was about kids and what diet might be ideal for kids. Is an animal-based diet appropriate for kids? And the short answer there, in my opinion, was clearly yes. I believe that an animal-based diet based on organs, meat, fruit, things like honey, is quite appropriate evolutionarily, clinically, physiologically for children, with so many precedents and so many examples of kids self-selecting those foods. During that Controversial Thoughts video, I reviewed an article about an experiment that was done in the 1930s by a physician looking at kids self-selecting diets. And these were children between the ages of 6 and 11 months. And one of the interesting things that I came across in that article that I mentioned on the Controversial Thoughts was that in this study, all of the kids selected at least a balance of what they considered to be alkaline and acidic foods during the self-selection process. And the majority of the kids actually had a moderate preponderance for potentially alkaline in the 6-month period of observation of those children when they were self-selecting their diets. So I found this interesting, and it reminded me of these discussions that I've had a little bit in the past, and I thought I might update my perspective on acid, alkaline elements in your diet. First thing I will say is that I've never seen any convincing evidence that an excessively alkaline diet is healthy for humans, or that alkalized water is good for humans, or that you can prevent cancer by eating an alkaline diet. These are generally non-science-based claims that come from the realm of plant-based rhetoric and fairy tales like this. Having said that, I did find it interesting that when children were self-selecting diets, they tended to balance acid and alkaline elements. And I think it's worth asking whether we should do that in our own diets and where we might find acidic versus alkaline foods. Now, another thing to note from the beginning is that the pH of your blood doesn't change based on what you eat. It's pretty tightly regulated between 7.35 and 7.45. If you don't know what pH is, it's a logarithmic scale of the concentration of a hydrogen ion. And that is what a lot of biochemistry is based upon. What is the pH of a given tissue? And what is the concentration of acid, or specifically the hydrogen ion, in that tissue? And so it's important to realize that your blood is extremely tightly regulated in its pH. Now, your interstitial fluids, that is the fluid between your cells, may be a little bit more variable based on what you eat. And certainly your urine, which may be an indicator of your interstitial fluids, varies significantly based on what you eat, because excess acid or excess base, that is alkaline, are excreted in your urine. And so you can take a urinary pH, which is a very easy, simple thing to do. You can buy urinary pH test strips on Amazon or wherever you choose to buy your goods, and you can get a sense of your urinary pH. And I think urinary pH is an interesting thing for most of us to experiment with if we're into that sort of thing. Urinary pH will vary throughout the day. It will vary postprandially, that is after eating. If you are waking up in the morning after a long fast, it may be a little bit lower, and it may rise a little bit throughout the day depending on what you are eating. Now, the other thing I will say here is that there's been an evolution in my thinking here a little bit. Many of you know my own story, starting out with a carnivore diet that was quite strict. And strict in the best sense of the word, I should say. It was very intentional. It was meat, it was organs, it was fat. And I did great on it for about the first year. I've also done a recent Controversial Thoughts about my concerns with long-term ketosis. Ultimately, I did run into issues myself with long-term ketosis, including muscle cramping, heart palpitations related to recalcitrant, that is unsolvable electrolyte issues that I think occur in humans when the actions of insulin at the kidney are not present, as happens in long-term ketogenic diets. This is not to say that I don't find value in ketogenic diets for certain conditions or in the short term, but I think that long-term ketosis and otherwise healthy humans is a recipe for basically unfixable electrolyte issues, muscle cramps, palpitations, sleep disturbances, and hormonal imbalances. So I spoke about that in probably two Controversial Thoughts podcasts ago. I will be the first person to say that I think a carnivore diet, an animal exclusive diet of meat, organs, fat, et cetera, like I was eating, is incredibly beneficial for many people. And I think that the things we learn from this should not be forgotten, which are that many people benefit from cutting out plant foods in their diet, whether it's GI issues, psychiatric issues, autoimmune issues. In general, I think what we learn clearly from a nose-to-tail carnivore diet, that is a diet that includes both meat and organs, is that getting more of these very nutrient-rich, very bioavailable, nutrient-full foods in your diet is a huge benefit. And what I discovered was that adding some plant foods, the least toxic plant foods, into my diet, back into my diet, was another huge benefit. So what are the least toxic plant foods? I've talked about that many times in the past on previous podcasts. Basically, you can think about it from the perspective of a plant and realize that a plant has roots, stems, leaves, and seeds that it is trying to protect. And all of those are highly defended. Those are all much more toxic parts of plants. In my opinion, it is the fruit or the flowers that are much less full in general of plant toxins. Now, one of the things we know about plant fruit is that it is much less full of toxins when it is ripe and the seeds that it is carrying are ready to be consumed and hopefully pooped out somewhere and not destroyed by chewing. So this is all stuff of previous podcasts. But the point that I'm making here is that by including some of the least toxic plant foods in my diet, specifically fruit, I was able to change the urinary pH and probably the interstitial pH of my body significantly. If you're wondering about ranges, when I was a strict carnivore, I would often see a urinary pH of 5 or 5.5. With the addition of fruit in my diet on a daily basis at this point, my urinary pH is usually between 6.5 and 7.5. So this, I think, is important to consider. And I found it quite interesting that the kids were doing this instinctively. And I will say that instinctively, there is something that feels more balanced. And again, this is completely subjective to me about including some of the least toxic plant foods in your diet. Some in the health space may argue that this is a reason to include vegetables. And from the perspective of acid-base balance, which I'll get into a little bit more in a moment, potential renal acid load, you could make an argument for vegetables. I don't think vegetables are the best choice here, again, because they contain more plant toxins, they're more in need of detoxification, and they cause more issues for humans. I think if you want to get citric acid, which is actually the usual precursor for bicarbonate, which is going to move your urinary pH and probably your interstitial pH to more of the alkaline range, then you can do that with fruit. And I think that's the best way, the most evolutionarily consistent way to do that. But this is what I believe, and this is sort of what we talk about with an animal-based diet. Since I mentioned citric acid, I want to make sure you guys understand that this is different than ascorbic acid, two completely different molecules. Citric acid is the namesake of the citric acid cycle or the TCA cycle. I won't get into all of that crazy biochemistry today, only know that citric acid is a precursor of bicarbonate, which is an alkaline type of ion in the human body, and that this is the general pH scale. Again, it is a logarithmic scale looking at the concentration of hydrogen ions, with batteries being super acidic, stomach acid, as I've talked about in the past, being very acidic in humans, and yet another indication that we are meant to be eating meat. Lemons, vinegar, tomato, blah, 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 blah. Lots of foods on here that I wouldn't necessarily include, but just a simple cartoon showing where certain things are with alkalinity or acidity based on a pH scale. The other thing to note is that general tables, general consideration of which foods are acid and alkaline are kind of a farce. And trying to anticipate which foods are acid and alkaline needs to be done a little bit more scientifically than most of the high-level articles you will see on the internet. If you really want to understand this sort of thing, you might look at an article like this from Thomas Remmer, PhD, A Potential Renal Acid Load of Foods and Its Influence on Urinary pH. If you read this article, you will find that there are some pretty darn complicated calculations looking at various different anions and cations in these foods from which the authors will calculate a PRAL, a potential renal acid load, with negative being more alkaline and positive being more acidic. And what you will find quickly is that most plant foods are on the alkaline side, though not all. For instance, walnuts are apparently, according to this calculation, acidic. And most meats and animal foods will have some acid load. So what we could get here is a balance of plant and animal foods. You'll notice that milk chocolates are acidic, according to this. Honey is slightly alkaline. Marmalade, slightly alkaline. Even white sugar, basically zero. Some of the most acidic, quote unquote, with the highest potential renal acid load foods are things like dairy and cheeses. Those are much higher even than beef, as you'll see here. And then you'll also notice that many of the grains are, according to the potential renal acid load scale, acidic in nature as well. So you do find that most of the fruit has an alkaline type of effect on the kidney. So I think that balancing this can be important. I think that it's interesting that kids do this intrinsically. And perhaps that's a signal to us that if we are eating intuitively, although I hate that term, from a place of good metabolic health, we may benefit from including some plant foods of the least toxic variety in our diets. Now, if you go further down this rabbit hole, what you will find is that there potentially are some benefits to this sort of thing. For instance, here's a paper showing that dietary acid reduction with fruits and vegetables, I would just favor the fruits, or bicarbonate as a supplement, attenuates kidney injury in patients with a moderately reduced glomerular filtration rate due to hypertensive nephropathy. So in people with progressive kidney disease due to hypertension that has injured their kidneys, including more of these alkaline foods is beneficial. One of the things I've noted about an animal-based diet is that the amount of protein that I would recommend, or that I think is evolutionarily consistent, may be difficult for people to tolerate who have already developed kidney disease, and they may need to decrease the amount of protein with increased carbohydrates. But nevertheless, I think it is interesting to note that potentially thinking about this, if you have a kidney injury, may be beneficial. The other thing to note is that there isn't a whole lot of pure bicarbonate in plant food. As I mentioned earlier, it's mostly citric acid that gets converted to bicarbonate in your body. Some people have recommended drinking very bicarbonate-rich waters like Gerolsteiner. I'm not a huge fan of this because, as you can imagine, if you dump a bunch of bicarbonate directly into your stomach, you can affect the stomach pH negatively. That is, make it more alkaline, which will make it more difficult for you to digest your food. This is another problem if you're just eating things like baking soda, which will alkalinize your urine and create some sort of an alkaline balance to the foods you're eating, but it is also going to essentially abrogate any acidity in your stomach, which is not something I am a huge fan of either. There's another article I wanted to point out here where they are estimating the renal net acid excretion by adults consuming variable amounts of protein. This is another paper looking at pretty complex formulas, just to show you that it's not as simple as just saying, hey, this food's acidic and this food's alkaline. They have to look at all of the minerals and the metabolites of these and get a sense of how these may affect the acid versus alkaline balance in the body, which is very tightly orchestrated and buffered and is an exquisite illustration of millions of years of, let's just say, mammalian biology, something to be marveled at, really. The other thing that I want to be very clear to point out is that there are no really good studies that show that higher protein diets are negative for bone mineral density. In fact, if you look at the protein consumption and bone mineral density in the elderly, the Rancho Bernardo study from Joanne Promislow, this is published in 2002 in the American Journal of Epidemiology, what you'll find, this is an observational study, but the study supports a protective role for dietary animal protein in the skeletal health of elderly women. And conversely, there is a negative association between vegetable protein and bone mineral density in both sexes. These are associations. We cannot draw causative inference here, but we can generate some compelling hypotheses. I think that bone mineral density is about many things, one of them being adequate amounts of protein in the human diet. And if you really look at the entirety of human physiology literature, adequate protein in the diet or even high protein, quote unquote, diets are generally associated, are almost unequivocally associated with better bone density. I think some of the concerns expressed by people in the scientific literature are that a high protein diet is going to be too acidic and it's going to leach minerals out of your bones, leading to a lower mineral density or osteoporosis. And that is not borne out in the research. I think in contradistinction, we can point out that getting an adequate, I would say a robust amount of protein provides building blocks for collagen and many of the minerals that are needed to make strong, healthy bone. So I think a high protein diet, what I would recommend is 1 gram of protein per pound of goal body weight is a safe place and will provide plenty of building blocks to make strong bone. That is in the context of thinking about your urinary pH and benefiting from some of the alkaline minerals and the citric acid found in fruits in this equation or in this specific instance. So Paul, what does this mean? What are you telling us? Basically, I'm mentioning or I'm pointing out that number one, kids self-selecting their diets do balance acid and alkaline elements. On a carnivore diet, if you are strict and you do not include fruit, you are going to have a much more negative urinary pH and probably more negative, a more acidic urinary pH and a more acidic interstitial fluid between your cells. That may not be a great thing for humans. And I suspect that adding some citric acid and other alkalinizing minerals found in fruit may actually be another benefit of an animal-based diet. So I wanted to point all those things out, show you how these things are actually calculated with a potential renal acid load. Recommend that if you're curious about this, you just go to whatever purveyor you would like and buy some urinary acid pH strips and check your urinary pH after different foods, after different meals, upon waking throughout the day and get a sense of it. My recommendation would be something between 6.5 and 7.5. It's probably ideal, much below 6.5. You're probably not getting enough of the alkaline elements, which can be beneficial from this perspective. So hopefully that's helpful. I also wanted to dispel myths about alkalinity and cancer. This is not supported by science that I've seen. I don't think that alkaline water is a great thing. I don't think it's something you want to be pushing too much in your body. I think your water should be a normal water pH, which is usually around 7.0. And I should also mention that it is possible to become too alkaline, which can be very problematic for you as a human. And yet another reason I don't think we should be drinking a bunch of alkaline water. One thing I do think we should be doing is getting organs in our diets. I've spoken about this widely. This is why we do what we do at Heart and Soil. Speaking about bone mineral density and acid and alkaline minerals makes me think of our bone matrix supplement, which is microcrystalline hydroxyapatite. I think this is a fantastic way for humans to get very high quality calcium and all of the other minerals that are needed to create healthy bones. And in the setting of an adequate protein diet, I think this can be a very valuable supplement. It's something that I recommend strongly to my mom who has osteoporosis. I also want to share with you guys a review we got recently on Histamine Immune, which was really striking. The title is Cured My Wife of Chronic Hives. This is from Sean M. He says, I am more into Nocitol and supplements than my wife, and she doesn't like taking pills in general. She was excited by the idea of a product that was more specific to her as a woman and agreed to try her package when it came out. She has also been experiencing chronic hives for many years. She would get hives at least once daily. She tried many different doctors and approaches, but nothing worked. Enter her package and her hives are cured. We didn't realize they had become more frequent and then gone away completely at first, but then on a couple of different days, she was busy and forgot to take her supplements. As soon as she stopped taking her package, her hives came back. This has happened enough times at this point, it's clear it's not a coincidence. I'm so grateful we found a way. She enjoys getting organs into her diet and the results have been even more dramatic than expected, including additional benefits beyond curing her hives. She loves them, thank you so much. You guys will know that her package is uterus, ovaries, fallopian tubes, liver, and kidney. I suspect that part of the benefit here is kidney, which has DAO, diamine oxidase. Another supplement to consider here would be Histamine Immune from our lineup. We're currently out of her package, but you can get on the notify me list. We are working really hard to bring this one back in the store. So in this episode, I mentioned Bone Matrix, her package, and Histamine and Immune. And hopefully this has been helpful to put some of this acid-based stuff into context for you guys, give you guys some science basis for it, and give you an update on where I am with my thinking around this. Certainly, it's been fun to mess around with my own urinary pH. It's always fun to pee on urinary strips and see how things change. But I certainly, as I've talked about in the past, feel significantly better in many ways with carbohydrates in my diet in the form of fruit and honey. So hopefully this is helpful, you guys. Stay radical. Love you all.